Perspective, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with hosts Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. Today we'll be hearing from Lois Gibbs of the Center for Health, Environment, and Justice and a piece on the Biotic Baking Brigade. Lois Gibbs was the keynote speaker in Brunswick last week at the Toxics Action Conference. Lois Gibbs was raising her family in Love Canal near Niagara Falls in upstate New York when in 1978 she discovered that her home and those of her neighbors was sitting next to a 20,000-ton toxic chemical dump. That shocking discovery spurred Lois to lead her neighbors in a 3-year struggle to protect their families from the hazardous waste buried in their backyards. In that fight, Lois discovered that no local, state, or national organization existed to provide communities with strategic advice, guidance, training, and technical assistance. She founded the Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, an organization that offers support to communities fighting toxics. Here is part of her speech.
The speakers I heard at a Right to Know meeting yesterday, actually, were talking about this is the last generation of people, meaning us adults and the younger adults, that will be able to make enough change in this country so that our country, our world can continue without serious damage that cannot be reversed. That's a huge responsibility. It's certainly a huge responsibility for people who are working in their own backyard, on their school issues, on the paper and pulp mill issues, on the fisher person's issue. I mean, there's just so many out here in Maine and across the country. But if each one of you won your struggle and then moved on to another one that wouldn't be quite as intense, we know how intense those local ones are, supported somebody else, even if what that means is talking to the Toxic Action Center about where do they need bodies next week? And how can you go and sit there? Or where do they need letters to the editor? Or where do they need, it doesn't mean you have to live and suffer through a daily telephone calls with a zillion people asking questions, but it means how can you help other people? And if we do this, we truly can change not only the world and our local environment, but the other thing we can do is change the way decisions are made. When there's enough of us and enough of these meetings saying the same sort of thing, it's going to make a difference. And I think actually, which was also through the help of the Toxic Action Center, Quincy, Massachusetts just won their school fight, very similar to Kathy's school fight in Massachusetts. And what they did there, which was very exciting, is that the leader of the fight is now the mayor of Quincy. The city council turned over, so over 50% of it is now pro-environment, pro-environmental health, pro-human health, and certainly pro-children's health. But if you look at corporate power, you say, oh my goodness, how would we ever fight corporate power? It's huge. They got money, they got PR machines, they can put ads in, they can take our politicians to trips to Hawaii to investigate a sludge farm that's working fine. They have all of this power that will control decision makers and decisions. And that's true. However, we have more power. We have way more power. Because although the politicians can, or the corporations can help the politicians by putting ads in and doing radio programs and holding, you know, little parties for the politicians, they only get one vote. And elected officials are elected by the people. And so our responsibility is to increase our power at the local level by getting people out to vote, by holding our elected officials accountable, by doing all of these things, because you are more trusted than the guy from Boise Cascade. You are more trusted. That you have way more power. And I'm just going to explain this a smidgen about Love Canal and then how that experience, even though it's now 20 years later, is still relevant today. And then I'm going to talk to you about how we're going to fight and win, because that's really the best part. And then we're going to take over the world. We're really going to start in our own backyard. Okay. When I moved into Love Canal, I was a homemaker. I didn't go to college. I got a C in algebra. I could never figure out how that was going to help me bake a better cake. My whole goal in life was to be a mother, a wife, and a good homemaker. And I was very proud of that role. I moved in with a son who was 1 year old at the time, perfectly healthy, Michael, and then later gave birth to my daughter, Melissa. I believed everything the corporations told me. I watched TV, I admit it. I didn't watch Soap So. Watch Phil Donahue, he was good. Those of you who are old enough to know who he is, I know there are some of you who have never heard of him. And these commercials, it was, if you're a really good homemaker, if you really care about your family, if you really want to succeed, you've got to use Dow's scrubbing bubbles. Because if your bathtub has a ring around it, you're a failure. And so I bought Dow's scrubbing bubbles because I did not want to fail. So after living at Love Canal, trying really hard to be this really, really good mom and homemaker, my son began getting ill. He developed asthma, he developed epilepsy, he developed a urinary tract problem, which required two operations to correct. He developed a immune system depression in which he had no immune system, similar to what you would see in an AIDS victim, except for he obviously didn't have AIDS. And they discharged him from the hospital because his immune system was so low, it was very dangerous for him to be there. And they told me I should take him home, not knowing my home was what was creating the problem at the time. It was one thing after the other with Michael. While at Love Canal, I gave birth to my second child, Melissa. And Melissa, after we gave birth, seemed to be perfectly healthy, a little small, but perfectly healthy. And then after a short time, Melissa too got sick. I tell you the story not because I have the worst story at Love Canal. I don't. My children survived. And not because I want your sympathy. I'm telling you this story because 2 years prior to this, this was 1978, 2 years prior to this, in 1976, a report was done at Love Canal. And this report looked at the dump site of 20,000 tons, and it looked at the community, it actually tested the community, backyards, homes, and in this report it said that people at Love Canal, and especially those closest to the canal itself, were in imminent danger. That Love Canal posed a serious human health risk to the population who lives there. They had several recommendations. One, they recommended that they clean up Love Canal, which would have cost approximately $20 million. The second recommendation was to put fans in the windows of the basements and suck the air out of the basement into the out-of-doors. Now, anybody who lives in Maine understands that you only do that 1 month of the year, right? We're talking Buffalo here, we're not talking Virginia. They knew we were sick. They made a conscious decision in 1976 to allow our families to remain in this community and be poisoned. And the way and the reason they did this, and it was truly a conscious decision, is they did a cost-benefit analysis. Anybody ever do one of those? Or understand them? They looked at our community and they said, okay, it's going to cost $20 million to clean up Love Canal. If we were to spend $20 million of taxpayers' money to do this, then who would benefit? And of course we would. And so they looked at our family and they said, well, and I'll just use my family as an example, my husband makes $10,000 a year. So therefore, my husband was worth $10,000 a year. And my son, who is likely to follow in his father's footsteps, is also worth $10,000 a year plus an inflation factor. Because I did not make a salary working outside, I was worth nothing. And because my daughter Melissa was likely to follow in her mother's footsteps, because it's a blue-collar community and that generally happens, she too was worth nothing. So when they added up all the numbers and figured out who was going to be exposed, they realized what they said, and what they decided is that the Love Canal residents, as a blue-collar working-class community, the Love Canal residents were not worth the $20 million expenditure that the state of New York would have made. This is important because when you're talking about a school issue, when you're talking about a paper and pulp mill, when you're talking about cleaning up a river, when you're talking about getting rid of dioxin, you are talking about a cost. And you know darn well that the cost-benefit analysis has been done. And it's been done on human life, and it's been done on fish, and some of the economy that might lose because of this. And they're making a decision not on value was founded under, not on values that human life is in fact very important, not on values that people who go out and, I'm going to say this wrong, fish lobster, what do you do with a lobster? How do you get them? Fish them?
Lobster.
You lobster. Okay, the fisher people who lobster lobsters, that's really dumb. Okay, well, those folks, I mean, that's their livelihood, and if the lobsters are full of dioxin in the tamale part, people are not going to eat them. But they don't care about those gentlemen and women who do that kind of thing. What they care about is the corporations who put them in and out of office. That is not the way this country is supposed to work. At Love Canal, we were very angry. So at Love Canal, we thought that was pretty bad. And so we fought back. We learned how to play the system, and we learned it by doing it and failing and sometimes succeeding. We did not, in 1978, have a toxic action center to turn to. We did not have a CHEJ to turn to. We did not have so many of you organization leaders out there to turn to. So we had to do it on our own. And we actually were really good at it. Not because of me, because we had this huge, very talented group of people. And we thought, and this might be familiar to you, we thought that if we could prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that damage was being done, we would win. Anybody feel that way? Wrong. We proved at Love Canal that 56% of our children were being born birth defective. We proved, we did our own survey. We looked at reproductive disorders, and we found that of the 22 women that were pregnant during this period when we were doing a study, that only 4 babies were born normally. The rest of the children were miscarried, stillborn, or birth defective. We looked at urinary disease. We looked at a number of diseases, and we found many of them increased. Cancer was the only exception, but we were all a very young population, and we actually are finding it now. We presented this to the New York State Health Department to say, look, you know, like you all have done, look, here's the damage, we got the evidence, you know, you got to move us now. And the New York State Health Department actually took the study from Beverly Pagan, who was our consultant, who lives actually here in Maine, and they threw it on the floor. And they called it useless housewife data collected by people who have a vested interest in the outcome. Duh. So Beverly, who's the most kind, gentle, sweetest person you ever met, and you all should meet her, she really is, picked up the report and set it back down on the table and continued to present the findings. Well, New York State refused to acknowledge them. So what we did is we organized around them, using the public as our advocate, and using the journalists to then help the public come up to speed. So we actually took the families who had the birth defective children, and we put them, we did, and it's really crude, and this is the name we used internally. We did the horror story of the week. And we talked about this family and that family. And finally, New York State could no longer deny it because everybody's already heard about it. They met Barbara Quimby personally. They met the neighbors personally. They knew their kids, they knew their house, they knew their families. The media loves human interest stories. And if it bleeds, it leads. And that's what we did, is we created these opportunities in which it fit in sort of those parameters. Finally, New York State could no longer deny it, and they came in and they said, you're right. We found 56% of the children at Love Canal were birth defected. But we don't believe it's due to Love Canal. It's 20,000 tons of chemicals in the middle of our community. What, we asked them, do you believe it is related to? And they quickly shared with us that we were probably a random clustering of genetically defective people. And statistically, that could be so. And they're not lying about that. It could be so. It wasn't so, but it could be so. When we asked about the miscarriages, they said that they weren't really miscarriages. What they were likely was legalized abortions women had because they were afraid of carrying their children full term, and they did not want to tell their husbands. They had an excuse for everything. And we realized very early on that science is critical to our work. We really, really need to know about chemicals. We do need to do these health studies. We do need to understand health effects related to the chemical. We do need this science. We need to know what's in the fish, what's in the river. But it can only be used as a tool, that it'll never, ever, ever, in of itself, win your fight for you, no matter how bad it is. So then we thought, we're Americans. What do Americans do best? So, absolutely. Anybody can sue anybody in America about anything. I mean, they seriously can. So we said, okay, well, we'll just be a good American, be very patriotic, and sue. And so we went to meet a lawyer to talk to him about whether we could sue. And the lawyer very nicely and calmly said to us, well, we really can't do that. Certainly not the way you want to do it. Because in America, it is not illegal to poison people with chemicals. That they actually give permits. Permits that, I don't know any of this stuff. Remember, I'm still at the scrubbing bubble stage in my life. It's like, permits, what is that like? It's sort of like a fishing license or a hunting license. Oh, so corporations can kill this amount of people a year, sort of like you can only take this many deer or this sex of deer at certain times. Well, yeah. When did that happen? Now, there are people who are just slightly older than me in this room. And I just don't ever remember in my lifetime, and maybe you do in your lifetime, where there was a law passed that says American corporations can kill, but humans will go to jail if they do that. There wasn't a referendum. It's not part of our Constitution. They slipped it in. So each chemical from each discharge point can cause at least 1 in 1 million cancers. They hope to hold it there, but they keep moving that number. And sometimes it's 2 in 1 million, sometimes it's 2 in 10,000. But it's a license to kill. And we should stop talking about it like it's a permit and a process. It is a hunting license. And the chemicals hunt down the most vulnerable people and take them out. Chemicals hunt down the most vulnerable wildlife or marine life and kill them. That's what a permit is.
Thank you to Peter Coleman for recording. For more information on the Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, you can go to www.chej.org.
Is this like an opinion piece thing?
Oh, you know what? It actually is recording already. I didn't put it on pause.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. What's your favorite kind of pie?
Squash pie. I love squash pie and pumpkin pie. They're connected. They're related. The squash pumpkin family with a lot of whipped cream on the top. I mean, like, a lot of whipped cream.
Could you tell the difference blindfolded?
I believe I could.
Okay. We won't test you on that. Thank you. What's your favorite kind of pie?
Pecan.
Apple.
Okay.
I don't know what to say.
Jam it on the one.
What's your favorite kind of pie?
My favorite kind of pie is chocolate cream pie.
What's your favorite kind of pie?
Apple.
Alright, what's your favorite kind of pie?
Oh, I'd say pumpkin, myself. I like that blueberry there. Oh, jeez. Well, apple's not bad either.
Chocolate cream.
Cranberry's nice.
Pecan.
Lemon meringue.
I don't know if there's any pie throwers in the audience. Yeah? Planning on throwing any pies? I think there'll be some pie throwing going on. in D.C. in the next... I don't know if there will be. I guess they got those places pretty heavily guarded, but I know Dave will be down there, so you never know what'll happen. But the president of the International Monetary Fund got hit with a pie in the face several weeks ago in Bangkok. And up in New Hampshire, they got the genetic engineer Neil First. Dave Pike did that. Or, no, Creamy Jeans is his name. Agent Creamy Jeans. And they got Charles Hurwitz out in California, the mayor of San Francisco, and a whole bunch of other people that really desperately deserved pies in the face, or probably a lot more. So I wrote a song for the Biotic Baking Brigade, and I hope you all sing along with me. If you don't know the words, you know, you'll pick them up by the second chorus or so.
So we have on the line with us here today Agent Creamy Jeans of the Biotic Baking Brigade, calling from an underground bakery somewhere in the North Woods. Hi, Agent Creamy Jeans.
Hello.
What's your favorite kind of pie?
I like all kinds of pie. Fruit pies, squash pies, tofu veggie pie, pot pie. I like to serve humble pie also, the arrogant ones. Oh, you know, the people that are up in the stratosphere, they think they're in power, and they think they don't have to listen to anything we say, and they just go about their business taking themselves so seriously that they can't even hear us. So every once in a while, they need a little bit of humor and a little bit of humble. So deliver it to them. That's the Biotic Baking Brigade's mission.
And how does the Biotic Baking Brigade serve up that humility?
In a pie. Right to the face. Squish. Gently and usually gently and humor. Part of the thing is we need some more humor. We need some more fun and clown around a little bit. It's a joke, but it's also, we've got a message behind it that, like, say, the CEO of Monsanto or Chevron or a geneticist. Well, you know, the Prime Minister of Canada, in fact, the Director of the IMF, all these people have been delivered the just desserts in the form of some kind of pastry.
And you, in fact, had an encounter with a certain geneticist, Dr. Neil First, who I believe was talking about cloning, right?
Right. He's busy trying to clone cows and anything he can get his hands on, he admitted. He would try to clone pretty much any kind of animal that would have profit involved in it, but cows especially, he's involved with out in Wisconsin. We heard his lecture and heard the answers and the questions and found that there was less than no debate on what he was actually doing, you know, the ethical questions and the possible effects of it, of DNA splicing. And so we just had our graham cracker crust with a little whipped cream. That is appropriate. Not exactly my favorite pie, but appropriate for him because he's working with cows. We just give him a little whipped cream and a crust and delivered it right to his face. He didn't find it funny. And I mean, other people, a lot of people in the papers, because we release communiques about delivering these sweet treats to the unsweet duck door. Papers carried it, and people thought it was funny, but the police didn't think it was funny, and of course, most people in authority don't think it's funny, because someone who's actually willing to step up directly like that, they don't like it. Well, it goes back a ways, throwing pies. You know, there was some political pie throwing in the 60s with the Yippies, and Johnny Carson used to put on pie throwing on his show, you know. It's definitely, the pie is kind of all-American symbol, right? Apple pie and such. And so throwing the pie is pretty American, too. In other countries, it's caught on because of the political action part. It seems that it's really caught on because of the humor of it, but also with the message. And people have adopted it. The local favorites in Vienna, one of the Freedom Party kind of ultra-right neo-fascist party in Austria, they got pied in the face, but it was actually with a Viennese chocolate cake. I just appealed to the higher powers and invoked the spirit of the Three Stooges, and then called for vision to replace blindness, and knowledge to replace ignorance, joy to replace fear, asked for to live free or pie. Pies, joy. Have at it.
See the man in his limousine, in his tie and well-pressed shirt, hoping that he's not been seen on the lookout for dessert. He knows that he is guilty, and a visit might be paid by the vegan vigilantes of the biotic making brigade. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See them shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers.
There's the chorus.
If you sell your city soul to the landlord's greedy pack, you, my friend, have earned yourself a tasty pastry snack. You can call yourself a liberal and hope your crimes will fade, but your sellout soul will be exposed by the biotic baking brigade. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See the shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers. If you cut down the last of the forests, spew poison in the air, don't you be surprised to find that cheesecake in your hair. Yes, if you are a corporate criminal, you've surely made the grade to receive a fresh baked goodie from the biotic baking brigade.
Here we go.
What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See that shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers. Space. So smile.